Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggling.
Yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio always works that on Friday night. West West, y'all.
I'll sit on you. I'll sit on you.
Bombs on the back of record company. Blow them up if they ain't wanting me. The National Guard is scared of hunting me. I love beef. I got you hoes ducking me. I drug beef. Bitch, I take your marijuana. These slugs, they keep your ass away from my corner. I drown niggas in 100 degree saunas. You can act a fool if you wanna. This is lyrical piranha. Strapped with a grenade in a pool with your mama. I tackle by the legs and I pull her to the bottom. Swift nutting up like a condom. Slapping if you fuckers got a problem. When I see them, you hoes in and up in the fucking mausoleum. Or hitting in the truck of a black and go beam, pulling the garage while you screaming. Keep the motor on, then I'm leaving. I
sit on you. I don't care who you are.
I sit on you.
I don't give a fuck about you or your car.
I sit on
fuck
you.
Fuck your house, fuck your jewelry, and fuck your car.
I sit on
fuck
you.
Fuck your wife, fuck your kids, fuck your family.
I'm alcoholic. Where's the fucking toilet? Pass the hot dog.
The law, aren't you Islamic?
Bitch, check your fucking mouth. I'ma keep eating till Richard Simmons comes to my house with a chainsaw to cut me out.
My
fucking wife, I had sex since I met her. Too busy fucking a 12-year-old babysitter. And all women ain't shit. Only good for cooking, cleaning, and sucking dick. And that's it. I'm responsible for killing John Candy. Got John Benet Ramsey, my 98 Camry. I don't give a fuck who you are. I shit on anybody, truly yours, the idiotic bizarre.
My adolescent years weren't shit to what I do now. I never grew up. I was born grown, grew down. The older I get, the dumber the shit I get in. The more ignorant the incident is, I fit in. Ignoring the shit, how boring it gets when there's no one to hit. I don't know when to quit, but when to fit.
No.
I know I'm a bit flaky, but they make me. They wake me and say they can take.
Come on.
Cause they who takes, I break and make achy. Cause they who mistake me make me so angry.
I sit on you.
Spit on you, start pissing and do the opposite on you. You wanna listen, I set up cop a squad on you. Start spilling my guts like chicken cordon bleu. And straight shit like Notorious Big did to that bitch on that skit on his last album. Pull my pants down.
I don't care who shit on you, I don't care who you are. I don't give a fuck about you or your car.
I'll sit on
fuck
you.
Your house, fuck your jewelry, and fuck your
car. I'll sit on
fuck your wife, fuck your kids, fuck your family.
Is Richard Pryor still alive? If not, I'm sicker than he was prior to him dying. Born brainless, this steel ain't stainless. Your blood stains are all over this steel, god dang it. Bitch, bring it. These niggas that I hang with, I hang you up naked by your ankles dangling. My meat, I stay strangling. I don't need your help. If you won't give me the pussy, I'll lose my belt. I'm what your daddy's not. Your mom's kinda got. Your sister team crush. Your aunt supply a rock. Buck 50, cross your neck, cross your check. I beat you with it, cross your check.
Yo, it's only right I jack your car keys and run. Spend all of my advancements on weed and guns. For fun, when I'm drunk, I run the truck through the weed house. Jump out and beat your peeps down worse than thieves out. Put you in chokeholds, I learned last week from the policeman who caught me stealing weed from his Jeep. I see hoes biting, y'all don't wanna brawl. That's like Debo fighting, Peebo Bryson. Fuck what you hollering and yelling about. I'll reach in your mouth to pull your fucking skeleton out. Niggas get hit with a two-piece.
Bling, bling.
With a poisonous thing, I'm such a violent thing.
I'll shit on you.
Hit the X, my disc slips and disconnects. Till I walk around this bitch with a twisted neck, but still sit on the first bitch who disrespect. Overreaction is my only reaction, which only sets off a chain reaction. It puts five more zany acting maniacs in action. A rat pack and black jackets who pack in 9mm. Five criminals pulling heaters and spilling liters of blood like swimming pools. Sightly individuals suited bitches too. A lot of people say misogynistic, which is true. I don't deny it, matter of fact, I stand by it. So please stand by it, the start of a damn riot. If you don't wanna get stampeded, just stand quiet. Boy, girl, dog, woman, man, child,
I'll shit on you. Shit on you, I don't care who you are.
I'll shit on you.
I don't give a fuck about you or your car.
I'll shit on
you. Fuck your house, fuck your jewelry, and fuck your wife.
I'll shit on you.
I will fuck your wife if you fuck with me.
I'll shit on you.
You heard me, bitch.
I'll shit on you.
D12,
I'll shit on you.
Your life, your wife, your kids, your mom.
Rap music has been getting a pretty bad rap for lyrics that are demeaning and offensive to women. I've got this graphic because often the reason, the defense is that it's art.
Mm-hmm.
This is from a rapper by the name of Bazaar. He raps, "My little sister's birthday, she'll remember me. A gift, I had 10 of my boys take her virginity."
Yeah. You.
I don't know if pack raping a little girl is art.
No, that's obviously said in a comedy way. D12 Bazaar, that particular rapper, is known for his outrageous lyrics. And
but that's not funny.
Extremely nice.
I need a blessing. Cooking niggas wrapped in Smith and Wesson. Fuck Corona, I'm off in Arizona. This ain't no rental, nigga, this is a loan. Extremely nice, I'm leaning right. Me against him, nigga, you seen me fight, nigga. Snipe from the roof, snipe from the booth. All the sniping, you see what sniping to do. 4-5 got him running out. 12 gauge, either way he coming out. Bitch, registered nurse, going to purse. Take the blood sense, all of the perks, that's me. I'm a bona fide crackhead. Get high till I'm happy. Happy. Get high till I'm happy. Bitch, you still got that baby in your stomach. I thought you said that you ain't fucking want it. Kanye West said he almost killed his daughter. Well, guess what, Kanye? I just killed my father! I'm on the news for raping Terry Crews. This is the freaky shit that me and Harvey like to do. Entanglement, Jada on some freaky shit. Will, don't get mad, you been out here sucking dick.
Rough and rugged shit, rough and rugged shit, rough. Rough and rugged shit, rough and rugged shit, rough.
ain't gonna lie, kinda in a bad mood. So I'ma take it out on you. Yeah.
I'ma take it out on you.
Pull up to the light,
yep.
Turn the car off.
Turn the car off.
Blow this bitch's bra off with a sawed off. I came to torture ya. Four niggas, four triggers in the course of
time. I can't face mama, deeper than the condom. Just the vagina, just left Wakanda.
Get your bite on,
yep.
Get your bite on. Scared of the dark, bitch turn the light on.
Ooh.
It's murdering this bitch, Jake. I get surgical in this bitch.
Dang.
I believe in God, I used to pray to Jehovah. So I got shot in the face, now all that's over.
Oh.
Ex-girlfriend's a stripper, believe I love her.
She's
sucking dick for a living, but please don't judge her. Got a bitch in Cleveland that be running scams. For my birthday, the bitch write me a ram.
Damn.
Half of Detroit, I done got y'all niggas. Beat up, smacked up, or shot y'all niggas. I am not y'all niggas.
Y'all
not y'all niggas. I'm on the robbery spree. Sliding through the D, come fly with me. I'm on the robbery spree. Sliding through the D, come fly with me.
Hey,
I'm on the robbery spree. Riding through New York, come ride with me.
Hey,
fuck the high.
Yeah, nigga,
fuck the high.
What is they jealous for? This helicopter propeller turned the nigga to Skeletor. I'm a bare-knuckle boxer, it's like my Bellator. That cartridge opened up from that chopper just like the Celador. Ah, clearly heavy, hear me correctly? I'm a motherfucking stoner, Corona is scared to catch me, nigga. No fear, I hope you prepared to test me. Tall can full of acid, you welcome to share this Pepsi, yeah. No subliminal, you rap cat through like fuck it. Pill a nigga muffin cat back blue, that's a body. Old shoddy, for the black Mac news, you would drive-by in the caddy, swing the lack back through, woo. That's the power move, gunpowder, down the pool, clown a cat, he in the shower cat, I'm in my shower suit, chopper so big it's bizarre, I don't know how to lose, plant your carcass right in the garden, niggas is flower food, pay!
What it do, man? This your man, King Eric, the Media Assassin, and we are now tuned in, episode 454 of Off the Cuff Radio, sponsored by Cocaine's Buddy Boy Entertainment, sponsored by Jesse's Boutique and Core Financial, and I got my host T-Max on the line tonight.
What it do, what it do, it's Monday Night Rawness, OCTF in the building, shout out to our co-host on Spirit of Sandman and Lady Chinchilla. And we are on, ready to mash shit for Monday. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, man. This is a special night tonight, man, because, man, this guy here, we just played some of the cuts from his new joint called Dumpster Juice. This guy played a pivotal part of the Detroit rap scene as a part of D12, and he's doing his thing on the solo tip, and it's good to have him on the line right now. One of the funniest dudes I've ever heard on the mic. So without further ado, we might just go ahead and just give it to him, man. We might just go ahead and say the Richard Pryor rap. Bizarre, y'all.
What's going on, man?
What up, though? What up, though? What's cracking?
What's going on with you?
What's good,
you,
man?
You?
All right. What's the word? What's the word?
Look, man, Bizarre.
Yeah,
great
we
to have you with us. Go ahead, King. Go ahead.
What?
Yeah, I was saying that, yeah, it's great to have you on, man. We played some of them cuts from the joint Dumpster Juice out now. Tell us about it, man. Tell us, like, what is the difference between this project and the other projects that you've been putting out previously?
Oh, okay, yeah. So this project, Dumpster Juice, is more gritty, grimy. It's more, back to the you know, original hip-hop form, you know, like kind of like in my battle rap days, the hip-hop shop days, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I just wanted to get back, you know, to the gritty, grimy beats. And, yeah, so that's, you know, that's what this album is really about, the theme of it, really, from beginning to end.
Now, one thing about it, Bizarre, is over the years, you know, for what you all have done in Detroit, you know, because it's not just, you know, D12 in terms of the collective, you know, of course, with you and Swifty, of course, rest in peace, Proof, but I mean with Esham, I mean Royce, you know, you all have set the lane over the past two decades in terms of really bringing that real gritty, that real in-your-face, unapologetic type of art that is, you know, definitely real, man. Tell us about your beginnings in terms of it, in terms of your journey on hip-hop and how you watch the Detroit hip-hop scene, you know, which you are a rich part of. Where did it really start for all of y'all in terms of, you know, from where you started and seeing everybody else come along as well?
I started the hip hop. That's where I kind of like. Before that, I was just rapping in the hoods, rapping in the basements and the homies' houses. But the hip hop shop was the first. My debut was which is a clothing store on 7 Mile on Greenfield, owned by Maurice Malone, and
Yeah.
That's where I met all the rest of the fellas at. But I don't, you know, I don't really know where they started at because they are a little older than me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned Maurice Malone. For those that don't know, like, that was definitely, matter of fact, that was definitely one of the heavy fashion hitters, you know, going back in the day, man, along with, you know, Sir Benny Miles, you know, April Walker, you know, that whole era.
Yeah. Like, this is Maurice Malone before. This is Maurice Malone before he blew up with the clothes, like. So he kind of blew up with us, you know what I'm saying? Like, because it's like, you know, when nobody buying no clothes at the hip hop shop, so, you know, he told us he had to shut the hip hop shop down. So he was like, man, I'm moving to New York. And I guess he had these Japanese people that was going to support him or back him financially. So, and he moved to New York. And he took Proof with him. So Proof had moved to New York too. And then after that, then Marshall ended up going to the Rap Olympics shortly after. And blowing that up, and so, you know, it all kind of worked out, you know what I'm saying? We just kind of like all blew up at the same time.
Yeah, you know, and one thing about it, Bizarre, because I read this was an old Source magazine, I believe, from 2001-2002. You all are a real brotherhood because, you know, of course, with M's success, you know, you always, all as a collective, always said how much the brotherhood was so strong that when M made it, and he made it in a big way, you know, a lot of dudes talk about how they're coming back to get the homies and put them on. M really did it for y'all. What was that like in terms of watching his ascent and then you all really having a chance to show your considerable talents on a worldwide scale?
Well, yeah, we had made a pact that whoever get on first, come back and get everybody else. And, I mean, we just weren't standing for no reason because we all were, like, active. You know, I was signed to a label called Federation Records. I had an album called Treasure Weirdos.
Okay.
Proof had moved to New York with Maurice. And Maurice had started a label. And me and M had just met Wendy Day. So I knew we knew about
coalition.
The battle that he was about to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we just kind of made this pact, like, man, you know, you damn near low-key need to spread out away from Detroit, you know what I'm saying? And, like, you know, go separate ways and see what we come back with. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we did. Is when I got the call that Marshall was signed, I was actually living in Dallas. My parents had moved, so I had to move to Dallas.
Right.
So.
And what do people have to understand about it with that journey in terms of, you know, the work that has to be put in? Because we see so many artists across the board who, you know, they want to shortcut the process, you know, then they think this is an overnight express to fame and fortune. From you all, what did you learn along the way in terms of the ups and downs, you know, the compositions, you know, the battles, everything in terms of, you know, going from regional to global?
What did I learn?
Mm-hmm. And what do artists have to learn as well? Yeah, in terms of what artists have to learn about how much of a marathon this process is to make it.
Oh, yeah. Work. Man, it's work, man. it's just work, man. It's constant work, man. People don't see that part of it, you know. You got to, you know, really be strong, man, and, you know, find that inner peace to where, you know, it's fun. Like, it be, you know, really sometimes it become a job, you know what I'm saying? Like, you might, you know, especially during album time, you might do 20 interviews in one day.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And then, like, especially overseas, because overseas, the people are, the humor is not like ours in America, so. You know, they're very robotic or, you know, stern. So sometimes they, you know,
right.
They might ask the same questions over and over and over again. So, you know, that shit could get tiresome. it become a job, man. You know, it's work, man. You know, you do a show, you got to get up. You got to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, catch a flight, lobby call. Everybody got to be in the lobby, you know what I'm saying? Shit, I've been sick before.
Oh, man.
Before shows. Had to go to urgent care and come back an hour before the show and still get on stage and rock out. You know what I'm saying? Like, shit, like, it's really with the, you know, it's really for the people, man, but it's a lot of shit to go behind the scenes that y'all know about.
Yeah.
Real talk, man. And let me ask you this too, man. Like, when you guys was coming out and you guys, y'all pushed that line in terms of pissing off a lot of people. Y'all pissed off a lot of groups with y'all content. Do you feel that with the way society is molded today with this cancel culture that it played a role in how you putting your art out there?
Say that again one more time.
Yeah, I was asking, like, with the way society is today versus how it was back then when you guys, y'all had a lot of battles, like, with censorship, especially with what M had to deal with people trying to censor him and all that type of stuff, and you guys pushing that line with extreme content. Do you find that kind of challenging today?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's definitely more different today. We definitely can't say what we said back then today. You know, back then when we were saying it, man, you know, I could say the wildest shit in the world, you know what I'm saying? And I don't think nobody would get offended. They just took it like, oh, that's bizarre. Or that's Eminem, you know what I'm saying? We didn't dress up like women. We said the wildest lyrics you think of. But, you know, I think people, you know, were, you know, more lighthearted and it was more funny then. But now, you know, I think, you know, social media has, you know, I think they're ready to pounce on somebody so quick. You know what I'm saying? They just look, oh, he said this, oh, he said this word, or he's offending this community, or so many communities, so many activists. So, you said, you saying some shit, you don't know who you offended. You said something about a cat, oh, he's offending the dog. Society Foundation, you know what I'm saying? Like, damn, you know, say something about a fish. Oh, he's fitting in the Fish Society of America, you know what I'm saying? So, You know, you really got to be careful, man.
It is.
It's crazy to the point where now, it's crazy to the point now, even when you try to post something, you got to either censor the words like shoot or kill. You know what I'm saying? It's like they really put a stranglehold into content, for so to speak.
Yeah, but girls can shake their ass on Instagram all day.
You know, it's wild, Bizarre, because when we look at what y'all, in terms of that level of MCing that y'all are at, because you all are MCs in every sense of the word, when we look at it before social media during that time, going back some years, and like King said, I think that's what contributes to the climate today of what people try to say is politically correct. We look at what happened with Dave Chappelle when he did The Closer, and some people got offended. King and myself, we just thought this shit was fucking genius. I mean, because Dave was hitting, basically when Dave was speaking on a lot of his monologue in it, he was making a lot of real social commentary that was like talking about the disingenuous of how everybody wants to censor speech, but how they're hypocrites and how they approach society recognizing when other people are offended by certain things, but they don't want to address that. But when other people are offended, oh, it's a big problem. You know, when you look at social media today, man, in terms of where, in terms of exposure in reference to how people are trying to use it to marketing and how some people are trying to, dare I say, even censor expression, where we find out freedom of speech isn't always free, where do you think the whole paradigm shift started in terms of where it was a little bit more back in the day, people were open for the expression. Now it's almost like they're trying to block the exits for expression and keep it confined.
Yeah. I just think that, you know, these organizations and these different companies, they're getting more power, man. They're being more heard, you know what I'm saying? And I think that sometimes that could be abused sometimes, you know. Mm. But I like the thing, right, that just happened with David Chappelle when Netflix didn't really listen to what, you know, all the accusations and kept his special on there. You know, I thought that was, you know, I thought that was dope, because you know it's got to stop at some point. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
because it's like, you know, I think it's just going too far. Like, you know what I'm saying, as far, and I think it's, you know, we're getting to the point where favoritism is being shown. Like, I'm a shock rapper. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I get shock, I get value. But like Lil Nas X, like I look at his videos, and I ain't one to judge at all. You know, I'm with all the crazy shit. But when I see his videos, I see him. He's trying to take it to another level.
It's not organic.
Yeah, it's not organic. It's like, okay, let me, you know what I'm saying, like, feed us a little bit, man. Like, you know what I'm saying? You're forcing it on us. We went from not seeing nothing to the extreme. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, how is this not being censored? Like, this is the extreme. You know what I'm saying? Like, the extreme. So I understand now, like, okay, this dude's doing this because he knows it's going to piss people off. But they're letting it ride, though. So we can't be mad at one thing and not mad at the other.
And I feel you on that. I think because we talked about this on the show and on Off the Cuff, you know, we have no issues with anybody, you know, in terms of their sexual orientation, you know, gay, straight, transgender, anybody. You know, we got love and respect for everybody out there. When we look at it with Nas X, though, I think what the public, like you said, Bizarre, I think you echo a lot of the sentiments that a lot of people do. It's not the fact people have an issue with him being gay, because there have been gay artists forever in music and they're legends. Rest
right.
in peace to
True.
People like, you know, George Michael, you know, of course, Elton John, you know, Frank, you know, so
right.
many others.
Frank Ocean, right.
You know,
Frank Ocean.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, Steve Lacy, and I'm a huge Steve Lacy fan. That dude is like, for those that have not heard Steve Lacy, check him out. He's
okay,
that dude.
Okay, Steve Lacy, I'm going to check him out.
Yeah, Steve Lacy, you know, because I look at artists from a perspective of their musical substance and their talent in terms of it. And I feel what you said about Lil Nas X, because, you know, nobody's saying you can't be yourself, but it seems like you said, it's like he's going to great lengths to, like, show everybody how authentic his gayness is. And I'm like, dude, you don't have to prove to us anything. What you do in your life is what you do in your life. That's not for us to comment or even see at certain levels, you know? Because at the end of the day, it's about, for any artist, no matter who they are, it's about how your music is going to reach the masses. And I think for anyone,
right.
that is the most important element. You have to have something
uh-huh.
that, you know, people have to understand this. Any artist out there, and we've done so many shows, hundreds of shows, so many people talked on and off there about it. One thing about it is being an artist, it's finding your niche in terms of where your audience is. And not only finding your audience, because the worst thing you can be is a niche artist that really is looked at as being more or less just a, I don't want to say token, because that just sounds like you're marginal. It sounds like I'm marginalizing it, but it sounds like more or less you're just a sideshow. You're not taken seriously. You're just something that is a caricature of the culture, but not a true representation of the art in it that's authentic.
Right.
And a lot of artists, in general, they just come in with this wild ass gimmick. You look at the situation with Tekashi and how all the shit he did, going over the top. Shameless plug, shout out to Sean Sotero for the book he wrote, The Dummy Boy, the Tekashi 6ix9ine story. If y'all haven't picked it up, check it out. You know, but one thing about it is, ultimately, it's about longevity. That's what you have as an artist, Bazaar, you've been able to maintain. Tell us about where you got your inspiration in terms of finding your style with your lyrics, in terms of what or who influenced you.
Probably my crew, definitely Eminem. I was a big EPMD fan. Redman, of course. Gangsta Nip.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are like the, you know, some of my influences coming up.
Mhm. And
yeah, you can tell that's a part of the humor side too, because even with M and Red, they brought the humor to the mix as well. So you could tell even when hearing that with your style, is that punchlines. You know what I mean? You hit them with those punchlines. They were really punchline heavy at the time.
Yeah. The punchlines, and you know, I like to do a lot of. A lot of overdubs, ad-libs, a lot of shit going on in the background, and, you know, just wild ass screams and yells. You know, that's what Eric Sermon and Redman was kind of known for. So, you know, I definitely you know got that from them.
What was it like for you, you know, when you all realized that, like, you know, you all were like really getting out there in terms of like people were really rocking with y'all on a big level, you know, and you all were like not rappers on the block anymore. Y'all weren't around the way artists. You were like worldwide celebrities. What was that like when it when you realized that?
Oh man, it was dope, man. You know, it just happened so quick. you know, it kind of happened so quick because, you know, Marshall was on first. So, you know, mm-hmm. we just kind of watch it from home, like being his cheerleaders and just being excited for him. Like, damn, he on MTV. Damn, he this. So for a while, for like probably like the first year, you know, only, you know, he was living in L.A., so only contact we had with him was kind of like when he came home to visit, you know what I'm saying? So when we finally mm-hmm. jumped into the mix, you know, we kind of just got kind of shocked because we kind of just jumped right into, like, superstar shit. Like, as soon as we jumped in, it was private jets and Grammys and MTV Awards and because we were doing, we you know, that Interscope had us doing that before we even came out with a record. So we just, you know, we was on a Chronic tour with Dr. Dre and Exhibit and the Dog Pound. And, you know, we was just behind the scenes, you know what I'm saying? So we was just kind of like, damn, this shit is surreal. Like, you know, but yeah, we kind of dove in head first. We didn't get no warning at all. You know what I'm saying? We went straight to private planes, not Delta or Spirit. Well, I'm a Spirit now, but you know, we went straight to the private planes, to the big boys.
And that Up in Smoke tour, which is possibly one of the life regrets that I couldn't make that tour, because I could tell, man, that looked like so much fun.
Oh man, that was dope. That was a dope tour, man.
Yeah, and for what y'all came around, I mean, what was just tell us in terms of when you compare the eras of hip hop today, in terms of touring, the music, and how it compares today to the touring and music, because there are three tours from that time, Bizarre, from the 90s and early 2000s. There are three that stand out, you know, the Survival of the Illest, Def Jam, Rough Riders, Cash Money, and of course Up in Smoke. And those are like three of the legendary tours of all time in modern history.
Got Hard Knock Life.
Hard Knock Life too. Yeah, thank you, King. Hard Knock Life as well. How do you see it from then to now in terms of how shows are managed, how the music is marketed and distributed and produced, and just the whole business aspect of it?
As far as touring or just...
Everything in terms of the tour, in terms of how the tours are put together, because I don't want to run on, but I want to kind of really make it as concise because I really want to get your thoughts on it being an established and legendary artist. In terms of, because when we talk about, because it seems like when y'all back in, it's like when, from when y'all did videos to where it was tours, it was just all organic. It's like it's. I don't know, to say something like the Survival of the Illest and the Up in Smoke, it just came together the way that it did. And I don't know if we're ever going to have something like that again where the excitement was just so, it just came from the roots. It just grew. I mean, it's like you got some of the biggest artists at the time coming together. And I mean, what was that feeling like, and how do you compare it today in terms of the mood and the moves of the business and the music today?
I still think these young kids, you know, it's probably the same shit going on. I think these young kids, they kind of know each other, whatever. As far as tours, I think the Chronic tour might have been like probably the best tour because we knew each other, so you know it was like basically everybody was affiliated with Dre, whether it was the Dog Pound or Warren G or Exhibit. So you know it was just a bunch of fun, a bunch of laughing, joking, shooting dice. You know, we was all in each other's dressing rooms, so it was really fun. But you know, sometimes it can become work if, you know, sometimes the group don't know each other like that, and it's always just about, you know, if it's about business. But, yeah, you know, we definitely had some, you know, classic tours, man. You know, always kept the competitiveness up to, you know, outdo the next rapper or the next artist on stage. You know, we kept it dope like that. But I don't think it's really too much as you know, has changed with the touring part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what about the anger management tour? Anger comparison.
That was dope too, because you know, like that was just basically us and 50. What was it? What was that? Us and 50. I'm not for sure who was on the tour.
Yeah, I think it was y'all. It was G Unit.
Yeah, that was fun again, because like I said, tours with family and you know people you know is more funner. I think that was a real fun tour. I think we was hitting on all cylinders at that time. You know, we was doing stadiums and you know, like I said, you know, and so it's work too. Because, you know, stadium shows are different from regular shows. You know, because a regular show, you can fly in, go to your hotel, sleep until showtime. Like, you sleep till 11 o'clock at night and have a lobby call, hit the stage at midnight and be done. But stadium tour is not like that. Like, stadium tours, you got to be at the venue at 4 o'clock, got to do sound check, you know, and basically you're just sitting around waiting. So we might be waiting for 4 or 5 hours. You know what I'm saying? They got catering there, they got trailers to watch TV, like a damn near like a movie set. So you just kind of like waiting around. But you know, we was young, man. We kept it fun and exciting when, you know, we kind of found our niche, how to stay not bored on the road. We seen a lot of shit that Snoop was doing. Snoop always kept a boombox or radio in his dressing room. You know, I kind of stole that from Snoop. I went brought like a big ass boombox. You know, chicken, Kentucky Fried Chicken, food, the drinks, the weed. You know what I'm saying? And the homies in there, man. So we just kind of made it like a party, man. Just tried to have fun, man. You know what I'm saying? And keep it moving. Shooting dice, security, our security guard shooting dice. We was wild, man. You know, I remember other groups like Ludacris, and they used to walk past like, damn, them boys, wow, they security out there shooting dice? You know what I'm saying? Because our security was our homies. Nobody was no real security. So, you know, B12 is just party. You know, we know how to party, man. We know how to have fun and make fun out of it.
And that's important. A lot of times people don't understand in terms of the road, like you said, because in terms of being a performer, that's the first part of being a professional, because you always got to be ready for the show. And then you have to do things in terms of blowing off steam, the unwinding, because when you're out there like that, different cities, like you said, prep time is a whole lot different than, you know, so you really have to find a way to unwind before you're ready to take the stage. So it's always good that you all as a collective, because most important, you were a family that loved each other. So there was always that, and especially on the road, man, you got to have that support in terms of everybody being there, because at the end of the day, that's all you have on the road are each other. You know, looking out.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, making sure that everybody's okay.
Right.
So that camaraderie, it's a, you know, it's something.
Yeah,
that
go ahead, please. It definitely bring groups closer. Definitely bring artists that don't know each other closer. You know what I'm saying? Especially when you like overseas. I remember one time we did the MTV Awards overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like when MTV Awards wasn't popping really like that. And I just remember B12 was there and Destiny Child was there. And they was young. There was a young Destiny Child. And, you know, we was like basically the only American group there. And, you know, so we ended up being cool hanging out with each other because, of, you know, we didn't have nobody but each other. You know what I'm saying? So we end up kicking it and laughing it with them, chopping it up and having the ball because, shit, that's all we had with each other.
Yeah, and overseas, you know, you're dealing with a language barrier, you're dealing with customs, you know, you're even dealing with the food at certain levels. You know,
oh, yeah, yeah. As far as the food, we shipped 400 cans of ravioli over there.
Oh, wow.
Man.
Yeah, because we got a big, huge following overseas, so we had been over, we went over there for like a month to doing promo when we first got started, so we was already hip to what we was in store for. We knew the food was horrible, so next time we went, we shipped 400 cans of ravioli over there.
I mean, but hey, that's what it is, man. I mean, in terms of preparation.
Should have gave y'all a sponsor or something, man. Your chef, y'all a sponsor off that.
Look, Chef Boyardee has been cutting that check, man. What up with that? Chef, come on, man.
Right. It
was, it's to hear all the travels, you know, that you had, you know, that you've seen around the world and everything, man. How did that inspire you in terms of you making your move in terms of your independent, doing your independent entrepreneurship, you know, starting your label with your solo albums and everything else?
Well, that's how I started from the beginning, you know what I'm saying, which is a good thing. Like, I started off independent. I had an album called Attack of the Wheels that did pretty well. So like, I think, I'm not for sure how many units, but so Atlantic wanted to sign me, and so I was signed to Shady Records as a solo artist first, you know what I'm saying, before D12. So we ended up deciding put the group out, you know, instead of just doing my solo album. So I told them I would put my solo album on the back burner, sacrifice for the group. So the solo independent thing was always, you know, a part of me. You know, I came into the solo artist, so I just, you know, got back in, you know, what did it in between albums, basically.
Got you. And pretty much from that,
now, you know, going back to the journey for a little bit, now you guys spoke highly of Bugs. You guys went to war over Bugs. Like, how much did Bugs mean to the group?
Oh, okay. Shit, Bugs was a general. I mean, he was a soldier. He was a soldier. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was a rider, man. You know what I'm saying? You know, he came in kind of like the later part of the group. So, unfortunately, you know, he didn't get a chance to join the benefit, enjoy the benefits of it, because he was a part of this other group called 31. And so, like, me and Bugs didn't start hanging out till we, you know, until like after the hip hop shop. And we was cool for probably about a year. And he was in D12. And so Marshall had asked me to go on the road with him and Proof. And I had went on the road with him, did like 10 dates. So on the last date of the tour, he told me that he wanted to sign D12. So me and Proof, we called Bugs on the phone and told him, like, yo, we about to get signed. M want to sign us, whatever. He was excited. He said he was about to go out and celebrate. So the next day, we had a show in Detroit. So we were supposed to get up with him tomorrow in Detroit. So when we got to Detroit, I had called his house, and I was like, yeah, Bugs, you know, Bugs in. And his grandma answered the phone, and then she was like, who is this? I was like, it's Bizarre. She was like, I'm sorry, but you know, Carnell has been, you know, he's deceased. So he never got a chance to sign the contract with us. So
But the good thing is, before he died, he had told us, like, yo, remember this dude named Swift from the hip hop shop?
Swift in the day,
like,
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I remember Swift. Yeah, he was in that group called the Rabies. He was like, yeah, man, we should really consider putting him in D12. I was like, all right, we'll talk about it when we get back. So that was his last request. So that's how Swift ended up getting in the group.
Of course, with Bugs, you know, and of course, King, you know, being a historian, he is, you know, bringing that up. You know, he was, you know, much love and respect for you, you know, for y'all lost one. You all came from the streets of Detroit Bazaar. You, Marshall, you know, Swifty, Proof, you know, Mr. Porter, all of y'all. So, you know, all of y'all understand what it was like and what you had to overcome as a collective to get to where you are. What do artists have to understand about, because you all, as much shit as y'all talked on Wax, and it was a lot, and it was funny ass shit doing it, but it's like you all never really were in terms of really trying to engage anybody on no real warfare shit. It was all lyrical fun, jabs here and there, but nothing really trying to incite a riot and a war. Nowadays, we see so many artists out here getting out there on social media, and it's almost like they're begging to start shit with somebody for attention, or even if there is already existing tensions there, trying to exacerbate it. What are your feelings about that coming from one of the hardest hoods, you know, in America, and seeing what really goes down when shit goes left, when it goes wrong?
Man, you really got to back what you're talking about, man. You know, you really got to mean what you say. You got to really be prepared for the consequences. You really got to, you know, we done been in wars before, you know. That shit ain't fun, you know what I'm saying?
Now, was like, that, and we're talking about off Wax in terms of, like, some stuff that was pre-existing in the streets.
Even being associated with 50, it was beef. But yeah, you know, we had to roll with bulletproof vests on, bulletproof cars. Like, his beef was our beef. You know what I'm saying? We didn't kind of caught out. A time. I think they caught Proof one time in Miami. Like, you know, the shit real. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I definitely would suggest to rappers, like, you know, it's a small world, man. It's a big world, but it's a small world. So I would definitely suggest to rappers to just say anything to be saying it if you're not, or you don't really mean it, because you never know what the circumstances permit, man. You might be at war,
right?
Like, 2:00 in the morning. And here go that guy with 4 or 5 guys when you said something about, you know what I'm saying? And then nowadays, you know, they pulling the phone out, making you look stupid, and you know what I'm saying? So, you know, even as an OG, you know, I still understand that, like, some of the shit that I want to say, like, I still kind of, you know, I censor myself more than I used to back in the day because of so much, you know, violence and shit going on, how real this shit is, you know what I'm saying? So I don't really want nothing put out there about somebody that I really don't mean. I'm just saying that as a joke, so, you know, I'd rather just pick something else to say.
Yeah.
Especially around this time now where they be lighting your comments up. And like you said, when you cut your phone off and you say something crazy, then you cut your phone off and your notification just going through the roof, you like, oh shit.
Yeah. You really gotta ignore that shit. Sometimes it be hard, but you know, because you know their job is to get your attention. So these things, they're saying, I didn't hear that. Shit, man. I hope you die. My boy got, one of my homies got shot in Chicago. They was like, damn. You know what I'm saying? I wish they would have killed you. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just...
damn. I mean, shit.
But then when you, snap on the people, they'd be like, oh man, I ain't mean that. I just wanted to get your attention. I ain't think you would respond. So I'm like, damn. Like this. So this shit is a whole game out here.
And it's wild, bizarre, because when you nailed it on the head, because for people, being a celebrity and being in that life means you sacrifice a lot. And people don't understand that. You're sacrificing time away from your family. You're sacrificing yourself time because, you know, everybody needs that time to unwind. But being in the profession y'all are in, you got to do it, even if you're not necessarily 100% to do it, you know. But then it also brings about a certain level of intrusion that people think they are obligated to have accessing your personal life, which they don't understand is your personal life. And then when they can't get into it the way they would like, then that's when the insults come. But then they don't understand that before anything, we're all people. We all have feelings, and
right.
You know, when niggas cross the line on things, you know, people wonder why. Well, why such and such stands out? Why, nigga, look what you said about him. I'm like, of course he's gonna. I mean,
right.
What did my man? What did Nikki say to Ginger and Christina? Look what you did to this fucking guy. You know. What I
mean? Right.
Don't say it. It's like, you know, But then everybody, it's like King, you know, said, everybody be clout chasing. You know, people want to say things just so they want to be the star. And I'm like, I guess our generation is just a little bit different, especially being older, because we didn't have social media when we were coming up, obviously. So, and even now it's like, you're looking at, because of social media, everybody is looking at this as a quick outlet to become famous. And a lot of people are just ratchet enough that their whole thing is, well, how can I get famous? Oh, yeah, well, I'm going to go ahead and just say the most foulest, disrespectful thing I can say about a celebrity that you know is going to get their attention. And not that we're trying to, you know, gloat about what happened to do, like when Dolph died. Rest in peace, Young Dolph. So when that comedian got out there in Memphis and started talking crazy, and then his ass got whacked behind it, you know, people don't understand that there are real consequences for words that you say. What you articulate is free, but what you say may cost you in the end. And some people don't understand that.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely real.
It's a different type of funk. Even with you guys, when you guys was going at it with Murder, Inc., and you were going at it with Benzino and all them, you got, at the end of the day, we knew you guys had, like, millions invested, so we were like, man, we ain't gonna let nobody die. But with these guys here, it's a totally different ball game. So it's like, these labels that I'm like, oh, let's shoot to be killed. They ain't really got no funk behind them.
Right.
That's real. Absolutely.
Well, I don't think the labels is involved like they was. You know what I'm saying? Because everybody's so interested in being independent. So it's not like that no more, you know. So, you know, a lot of these guys got distribution deals. So they just turn their albums in and they might have a label representative, you know, go out with them somewhere, so do something. But, like, look at the cast that signed Empire. You know what I'm saying? They ain't really got a structure like that. But, you know, when we was around, man, you know, if we had beef with somebody and, you know, serious, like, shit, Jimmy Iovine was on the phone talking into they label head. You know what I'm saying? It was way deeper than us. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know. They, you know, if we did a festival, you know, we on the same festival, they'd that make sure, you know, that we perform nowhere near the same time as each other. Or at the MTV Awards, they'll make sure that we don't sit, you know, like the seating, like if we go to the MTV Awards, they'll have the people faces, like everybody seat, like 50 Cent seat, Fat Joe seats. And the people that got beef with each other, man, they way on the other side of the auditorium from each other. You know,
Bizarre, you hit on a great point with that, and I wanted to speak on this because you made an absolute dude. I don't think you really know how real you were when you said that. And but then again, of course you do, because you understand the politics. People don't really understand how real that was. Because when you said Jimmy Iovine gets on the phone with the label head, it's like, okay, this is a situation where it's like, all right, we're going to stop this before it goes there. And this is where people are taking an interest, a vested interest. One of our good friends out in California with the situation, rest in peace, Draco the Ruler, because we got heads from all over, and we get the news from one of our people we talked to about it. You know, the situation that happened with Draco, because we heard that there was an issue Draco had with some individuals, and when we talked to our peoples out there, their biggest thing was, if you knew there was that issue, they should have, you know, those individuals should have never been on that bill at that festival. Because, like you said, it's a big world and a small world at the same time. And one thing about it is that people think that you're so big and you're bad that you can talk shit about somebody. I'm like, in the words of the immortal Bugs Bunny, and Charlie Murphy, when you habitually line step, in the words of Bugs Bunny, of course you realize this means wall. And it's on site. It's on site with certain people once it goes there. And like you said, how y'all would do it back in the day, if you knew there was an issue, then there were provisions, there were measures, there was protocols.
Yeah.
That was too much money on the table.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. And then, you know,
and they were like, nah,
they being groomed different.
Go ahead.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they're being groomed completely different. Like I said, like, to me, you know, the days of the, like, real labels is gone. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because all these rappers are so convinced that they should do a production deal, or, you know, independent. So, you know, not saying nothing like that, but, you know, just say, for instance, you got a rapper, a little young rapper, and his uncle is a street nigga, and his uncle putting money into him. His uncle got him signed. Okay, bam. The rapper blow up, and uncle do a deal with Empire. But his uncle want all control. We want to put this out. This they want to do this and that. So, you know, they moving like that. Uncle got street niggas with him. He's moving. They moving no different. The only thing they using the label for minimal services. You know what I'm saying? They're controlling their own destiny. I think that's, to me, that is how they get in more trouble. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, when we was on Interscope, we had to act a certain way, walk a certain way. You know what I'm saying? Like all the shit that these dudes is, these rappers be getting caught for, they're getting caught with guns and pistols, and like we had people around us that you know, that would never let that happen. Like we couldn't. You know what I'm saying? We couldn't do that. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't know because of how big we were. You know what I'm saying? And we was with Eminem, or is that how all the rappers do it? But I know us, you know what I'm saying? And the rappers that I know is like, You know, it was provisions made for that, man. Like, you know, you damn near was getting babysitted, man. Like, you know, even about where you going. You know, I know even with us, it's like, oh, where you going? Oh, I'm about to, I'm in on the road. I'm about to walk to the store. Hold on, man. You don't need to walk to the store by yourself. Well, let me send security with you. You know what I'm saying? If a club looked like it was getting rowdy or something, they getting us out of there. Oh, you know, our security would tell us, like, yo, this shit don't look right. You know, I don't think y'all should go in here. You know, we going to pull out from this.
But that's so called having a network in place, Bazaar, because you all came up at a time, and I think artists need to understand what you all had back in the day, because like you said, in terms of the essence of entrepreneurship that we're seeing now, what we're seeing are artists that are, they want to move on their own volition, and we get it. We understand entrepreneurial spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Me and King, you know, with this show, we do this on an entrepreneurial, independent level. So we understand you want to be able to move how you want. But however, there's a certain mentality that you have to have in terms of understanding it. And like you said, with the labels, the A&Rs are not, you know, you don't have A&Rs. It's not set up anymore where you have the publicity people, you know, you have the media training, your A&Rs, making sure that you're polished before you come in. So you got individuals that, like you said, are coming in straight off the block, and they're just trying to, and I was reading, you know, Sean's, you know, book, you know, about Tekashi. And a few pages in, they were talking about how one of the dudes Tekashi had met, the dude gave him some real advice in it. And he was saying, you can't have street niggas in your business. He's like, when you're in a professional rap profession, you can't have street niggas
right.
in your shit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, because you
absolutely.
Have.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
Yeah, and I think this is where, because I'm not necessarily trying to preach, but I'm just trying to give it the facts. When you are a professional,
mm-hmm.
there is money that is involved. There is reputations. There are other people's reputations and money involved. There are branding. There are endorsements. There are a lot of people that have incorporated themselves into you being a corporation that represents their corporation. What we are seeing now with certain individuals is that they're putting a premium on something that is very opaque and even intangible of what real credibility is. Because now it's the whole thing about everybody is a street nigga. Everybody's the biggest killer. Everybody's the biggest hustler. Everybody fought the most bitches. But nobody is being responsible. Well, I won't say nobody, but a lot of people are not being responsible, understanding that once you become what did Detective Mel tell Tony and Scarface when he was trying to shake him down, that, you know, you're public property now. So now everybody thinks.
Hey, I see you do a lot of movie quotes, man. You must watch.
Oh yeah, we're movie buffs.
That's why I call T Mac. That's why I call T Mac.
Y'all doing
the
about 10 movie quotes.
Yeah.
No, but you are. Y'all absolutely right, man.
King.
You know, we from Detroit, Michigan. We from Detroit, man.
Right.
You know, one of the grindiest cities in the world. And when we used to go to L.A.,
mm-hmm.
you know, we never had interest in going to Compton, South Central. Like we said, man, we know what the ghetto looked like. We were never interested in, like, you know, kicking it with the Crips, the Bloods, or getting into their politics and none of that, because you know, that's their politics. We know what come with that. You know what I'm saying? We know what come with that. So B12, we always stayed away from that. But, you know, even though we was in squabbles and scuffles and plenty of fights and whatever, but, you know, we never tried to, you know, we definitely didn't glorify it, and we just went into that. We wouldn't. Some of these rappers get off the plane and they're like, oh, man, take me to Compton, man. I want to go with where the blood's at, man. I want to, you know what I'm saying? But that's cool. But, you know, if you know anything about L.A., you know, it's a price to pay with that. You know what I'm saying? Not in your pocket forever. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, bro, we came here to go to Roscoe Chicken and Waffles. You know what I'm saying? Be in Hollywood. Go to
hit them beaches.
Plant, get up with Dr. Dre. Make some dope songs. Smoke some good weed. And take our ass home.
Right.
That's what we came to L.A. for. The experience. Like everybody else. Got. We ain't come here to get into all of that. Because when you get into all that, that come with a price. So that's how I've always been. You know what I'm saying? Like, even to this day, you know, even in Detroit, you know, like, you know, my cousins, you know, they be, hey, man, what's up, man? We going to the after hours. You want to, no, man, you know, I don't get down like that. I never got down like that. So, you know, that's why I got, you know, to be an old man is ducking and dodging the bullshit. But like I said, man, I really think that people, these artists being so, want to be so independent. And,
right.
you know, and by these street niggas having these labels, because they're financially backing these rappers, they ain't
right.
teaching them how to move or whatever. You know what I'm saying? They with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just think a lot of this shit that these rappers be in, like, you know, like rappers getting caught. They security guard got 20 pounds of weed on a plane. What type of shit is that, man? Like, what's really going on? You know what I'm saying? Like, the rapper, it's 20 niggas on the bus, but the rapper got to take the gun charge. Like, what? You know what I'm saying?
Like, it ain't even his gun.
Yeah. See, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, even with us being street niggas, I'm never going to have a gun on me. Because I'm the star, I can't go to jail. Now I can build
you.
You
the breadwinner, y'all the breadwinner.
Exactly, protect the king. That's how we was always taught. Even with Marshall, protect the king. When Marshall used to walk, we always used to form a circle around him. Like,
right.
No, we got to protect the king, man. You'll never let the king get taken. You know, I think some of these rappers be crashing
check.
Out, man. They be sending them on dummy missions.
But that's the chess
game. You can't
have
the superstar in the dirt. You can't have the superstar in the field getting dirty.
Yeah.
You know, but
you
are
having John Gotti getting out there and do the shootouts instead of Sammy the Bull.
Yeah. But you know, some of these rappers want to be on the front line for clout, though.
Right.
You know, they be wanting to, you know, they want to pull up. You want to pull up to somebody getting the ass. I want to be somebody's ass, but you want to be the one that's on the camera helping me. Bro, you a boss. You shouldn't even have to get out the car. You shouldn't even be seen at the scene.
Exactly. And that's real because a lot of times artists have to understand, you know, there's an element about staying alive in all of it. You all, look, Bizarre, you're from Detroit, so you all, we know about the history of Detroit with Maserati Rick, Best Friends, the 50 Boys that would eventually become BMF.
Right.
The, and we know about the real hood niggas out there like Trick and all of them. You know,
right.
So the history you all have growing up in your city from the Goonery side was what ultimately groomed y'all to understand how dangerous and how real it is in the streets when it goes bad. I mean, what you said about how, because it's like you all were confident enough, first and foremost, as men, that your reputations were not going to be predicated by somebody else's opinions and their
exactly.
notions. You all knew what was best for you as individuals. And you moved as a unit in a collective context of what was good for the group, not for what outsiders thought.
Right.
How I got to move.
Yeah.
That's how I got to move. Hey, I was going to shoot you this, man. Now, this was also around that time where M was transitioning into movies and he did 8 Mile. Now, looking at 8 Mile, do you think they captured the true essence of 8 Mile in the Detroit battle rap scene?
Very, very close. Yeah. Very close,
And I mean, when you look at that element of the hip-hop culture in terms of battle rapping and everything, because you all came up in that, how do you feel today about some artists that are not necessarily, you know, battle rap? How do you feel about it today in terms of where it is, in terms of, like, the cyphers as we came up seeing it, like, you know, the smack battles and everything, the evolution or, you know, just where it is today?
I'm definitely proud of it, man. Cause, you know, I'm a battle rap fan. I'm a battle rapper. Grew up battle rapping. You know, to see what it is today is just, you know, it's incredible, man. My boy Big T, that's my little homie from Chicago. That's like my little brother. And you know, I groomed him in the game, and I remember when Smack first started doing the rap battles, and to see it now where these guys are getting paid $20,000-$30,000 a battle, you know what I'm saying? It's great, man, because they really live it off battle rap. And now you got Drake involved, you know, you got Caffeine involved, and now battle rap, it's basically become his own sport. You know, I seen Q-Tip make this comment one time. He was on this show and a battle rapper was asking Q-Tip. He was like, yo, man. So Q-Tip, what advice would you give to battle rappers that's trying to be in the industry? You know what I'm saying? Trying to get on, trying to get a record deal. And Q-Tip response was, why are you trying to get a record deal? This is a whole sport you're doing. Y'all own stars. Y'all understand that? You know what I'm saying? Y'all doing the same
thing.
That's
coming from a legend. Yeah, that's coming from a legend.
If you battling every two months or every month, and you getting $30,000-$40,000 a battle, man, come on. You probably making some more than these rappers is. You know what I'm saying? And it's a whole fan base for this. So, you know, I thought that was dope. I never looked at it like that.
Now, when you look at
hey,
the
you
battle,
know what? Hey, I, check this. Oh, hey, hey, T-Mac, check this out. Now, you know,
right. We
got a cheap plug on this one here. And you know this. You know, right. I'm about to go up with this one. Now, we know.
Do it.
I heard a couple weeks ago that Joe Budden and Gilly the Kid want to do a verse. And I said, man, that shit ain't going to sell. We need Bizarre up in there. We gonna do a million off tops of Bizarre in the middle.
Yeah.
They gotta stop ducking you, man. Let them. We talking bully shit, man. Gilly, Joe, stop ducking man. Get Joe, get Bizarre in there.
I ain't think about that. I forgot I had beef for both of them.
niggas is ducking, man. They gotta
You know how it is, man. You know, you play the game when niggas try to be quiet, hope you'll go away. Then when you get loud, then they want to get your attention. So I get it.
Yeah, man.
I had to put
game,
that out there, man. For this show to go out there, we need that. We need that million off top to make this happen.
Yeah.
We're going to
do a million off the gate.
When you look at it from the Detroit rap scene today, Bizarre, in terms of when you look at some artists, you know, like back in the day, Invincible, one of the illest white girls, for those that don't know, that y'all never heard. And also, too, some of the new guys, like, of course, Shout Out Ice, Wear Bezo, and Payroll Giovanni. You know, what do you feel about some of the legends past and present, you know, and the up-and-comers that are still putting on for the city, you know, still doing it? Because we haven't even really gotten to how you and Eshawn clicked up, because y'all had the similar horrorcore style. But tell us about how you feel about the next generation of Detroit rappers coming up.
Oh, you know, these guys have been putting in work for a minute, man. I'm definitely proud of them, man. You know what I'm saying? Detroit got a two sides of it. You know what I'm saying? We got a gangster side and we got a hip-hop side. You know, mm-hmm. and I think the hip-hop side kind of dominated for a while. You know, with Slum Village and J Dilla. But you know, they didn't. You know, but it's always been an underground gangster side too, with Blade Icewood, Street Lords, Rock Bottom.
Yeah. Ooh, that story in it. Ooh, man.
Yeah. So basically,
Cheddar Boys. Yeah, that Cheddar Boys story is something, man.
Yeah. So I think he really kind of knocked the door down for them. So.
Oh yeah, we can't forget T Grizzly, man. You know, first day out. I mean, he's really it's. But to see everybody, the foundation. I mean, to see everybody coming along in the foundation that y'all have laid down, man. I mean, you know, I mean, Detroit has such a rich history with Motown. I mean, you know, just you know, of course, General Motors. You know, from Commerce to music composition, to hip-hop. I don't think you all as a city get enough credit for what you have brought to the culture.
Right. Yeah. Detroit different, man. Ain't no place like this on earth, man. You know, a lot of people, you just ain't going to understand it until you come here and visit, man. There's a lot of historic history here, man. People talk different. They act different. They walk different. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man, we got a lot of history here, man. All the way back from Marvin Gaye and Berry Gordy and Supreme. You know, it's a lot of history, man.
Yeah. So tell us about your work you did with Eshawn, because both of the wild and crazy twisted styles you all have. It was just basically inevitable that you all would click up. How did that happen in terms of when y'all finally got together?
I don't think I ever worked with Eshawn before. Not directly. No, I like, you know, somebody put me on with him or something. But, you know, we ain't got no beef or nothing. You know, we had beef back
in
the day.
Okay,
but,
got you.
You know, it's all good, though, you know. He definitely is a Detroit legend, especially in horrorcore.
Definitely. And that's a faux pas.
Yeah, that'd be weird, though, how they be just slapping people verses on songs and shit. That is very weird.
Yeah. Yeah, people be doing that to B12, man. Get a verse from me, then get a verse from Conniver, Will, and get all the verse from all these people. They get a verse from all these people.
Yeah, because I remember that weirdo shit they did years ago with y'all. They did that weirdo shit with y'all years ago when they put you next to Cannabis and Cannabis was dissing Eminem on there. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Some dude bought a verse for D12 and then put Cannabis on song with us and made it seem like he was dissing Eminem. Because they don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know we all close as hell. We be at the studio every day together. Even with Eminem, so it was like we thought it was funny.
Yeah, but I mean, when you look at it, man, I mean, when you look at all the legends that you've worked with, you know, I mean, it's just to be able to do what you've done and to still be doing it strong. How does that feel knowing that after all these years, you have still maintained a presence, and not only a presence, but a profound and distinguished one.
Right. Oh man, it's hard, man. You know, consistency, man. You know, a lot of hard work and dedication, man. You know, just staying relevant, man. You know, you got to treat this shit like a, like, you know, I ain't gonna say like a job ain't really the right word to say, but I say you got to treat this shit like the passion that it is yours, man. I think a lot of older rappers, I think the reason that they fall off because they give up on the game. You know what I'm saying? Like they stop can't they become family man, and ain't nothing wrong with being a family man, but your family got to know who you are, you know, and you know what you stand for. I think a lot of guys that they just become full blown family man and start saying old shit like, oh man, these mumble rappers and oh these rappers today, man, and I don't listen to this shit today, and that's cool, but I don't particularly like some of these rappers, but it's my job to know. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's my job to know what's going on. You know, some of these rappers don't even know what happened to Drake or the Ruler. You know what I'm saying? It's my job to know. Like, you know, I seen LeBron James be at high school basketball games. That nigga, LeBron James know who coming out of high school that's dope. Because that's his job. That's how in the basketball he is. He knows who coming out overseas that's good. So, as me as a rapper, I gotta stay relevant, man. I gotta stay on top of my shit, man. You can't be asking me. You ask me who five rappers is, and I don't know. Man, what am I doing? You know what I'm saying? Like,
but that's,
you know what I'm doing. It ain't like I said. I ain't gotta like their music. And,
right. And that's real because it's like you said. Because a lot of times there becomes this whole element of this, like, King and myself are old, but we don't hate the younger generation of rappers. It doesn't mean we love everything that's out either. But there's a lot of the new kids out there.
There's a lot of gunners out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of gunners out there.
And if anything, that keeps us motivated to follow up what's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's also for us being.
Because I keep young people around me. You know what I'm saying? I got a label. I got like little young artists signed, and you know whatever. I know sometimes they come and tell me like, you know, it just stay relevant, stay on game, man. Like you know, one of my little homies had to tell me one day. He said, "Hey, OG, hey man, we ain't wearing the long t-shirts no more, man. You know, we wearing them a little tighter, man. You know, hey OG, we doing V-necks now, man, or, hey, man, we, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, oh, shit, well, so you got to change with the time, man. But, you know, so you got to stay relevant in the game. This is a young man's game, man. You know, you got to stay relevant, man. One time I seen Kevin Hart. He was doing something, and he hadn't shaved. And I'm like, damn, Kevin Hart got a lot of gray hair. I didn't know that nigga was that old. But then I had to realize, oh, shit, Kevin Hart. He got to stay Kevin Hartish. You know what I'm saying? He a figure. He gotta put that little dye in the beard. And, you know what I'm saying? He gotta stay on point. He can't let himself go. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And, you know,
right.
Not saying,
right.
You know, you got to stay up to part, man. You got to be relevant, man. So I think that's how I just stay relevant, man. Just be me, you know. Stay with the latest fashion, you know. Keep my hair cut, you know what I'm saying. And put out dope music and still hustle and grind, man. You know, because you know, to me, like the past was the past, man. I don't live off the past, man. You know, yeah, D12 was good and that shit was good back in the day, but what am I doing now?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because a lot of dudes. Oh man, but you know what I'm saying? That's like me. That's like motherfuckers saying, "Oh hey man, we won the championship. The Pistons won the championship back in 1994. Man, it's 2021. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, what are you doing now? And it just stay relevant, man. Just, you know, like a lot of these older guys don't understand is your career not over, man. You know, people, like, you got to think about this. One thing about our generation that's dope is these cats, all of us that's in our 40s, we're not like our parents. Our parents hated rap. We
right,
grew up on
right.
rap. So a guy that's 45,
exactly.
50, he's not really that old. He can, you can get in the car with your daughter, and it ain't going to offend you that she listening to some rap with some cussing in it. You probably, they're probably both listening to this shit. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, you are younger. This is a younger generation. So y'all both grew up on rap. So guess what? When summertime comes, where does the older guys get to go for a concert? Because you old, but you ain't that old. Damn, you don't want to go see Frankie Beverly and Maze. So guess what? You know, guys like Too Short and E-40, Scarface, Ghetto Boys, they making money because it's an audience for that.
That it is. And when you look at it, and look at yourself, Azar, you're still doing it at a high level. Jay-Z is still doing it. Nas is just fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just amazing. I mean, Griselda, you know, shout out to Benny,
right.
Westside, and Conway. They're in their late 30s. And they're wrapping circles
right.
around a lot of these young boys out here. You know?
Right.
I mean, Ghostface Killer. I mean, the Woo album that they did with Apathy. You know, oh, God, that first single, Method, Ghost. I mean, the shit was ridiculous. Master Killer's
right.
I mean, it was like just to watch all of them, and these guys are in their late 40s and 50s, and these guys are still lyrically just sharp. And
exactly.
you know it shows.
You said Method Man got a son that's young, you know, young cat. I don't know how old he is, but I think he maybe like early 20s or something.
Mm-hmm.
And my boy Big T was in the studio with Meth a couple weeks ago. And
okay.
Meth brought his little son there, and his son was a fan of Big T, but. Show you the generation gap. His son is a fan of Big T. But Meth is in the studio with Big T. You know what I'm saying? It's still around at a high level. So the connection is, you know, still there. Like, we're the first generation that our kids that grew up on rap. You don't
That's
have
real.
To, you know what I'm saying? We don't have to censor it for us. You don't have to, oh, turn that shit off. We ain't about no kissing, sucking, dicking. You know what I'm saying? We get it as parents. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I think that's the difference. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't put us in the grave yet.
I think what happened with a lot of older cats, too, is Mike Tyson had a best quote. He said, it's hard to be hungry when you sleep in satin sheets. Dude just lost that hunger, man. They ain't eating fish sticks for dinner. They eating that steak. They drinking that, you know what I'm saying?
You know
that
what,
BSOP.
I disagree. I disagree. They is eating fish sticks for dinner. They just got to, like my mama used to say when I was young, nigga, you got the taste of Red Lobster, but you got the money in McDonald's. So trust me, them royalty checks and all that shit ain't still coming in like that. It's just that their ego is still there. You know what I'm saying? They still living off the past. Oh, man,
right.
We sold 4 million records. Oh, man, we did this. Oh, man, such and such and such. Oh, man, we was doing this. Oh, man, we was doing that. So, you know, I just never wanted to be that guy. I never wanted to be one of those guys that was, oh, man, I used to play basketball with Jalen Rose in high school, and he used to. No, man. So, you know, and I just, I'm inspired by the dudes like Snoop and all the other guys that stay relevant, man. Because this, if the older guys didn't realize, nobody gives a fuck about you rapping, bro. It's not about the rapping no more. It's about all the other shit that go along with it. That's where the money at.
The package.
You just got to keep rapping. The package. Look at Gilly the Kid. He pick up his phone and start talking in it. And start talking about relationships. And look where he at now.
Yeah. I mean, because when you look at, and that's what we call bizarre in show business, is the second act. You know, Bill, you know, Gilly has become a podcast.
Second win, I call it the second win.
Second win. I mean, look at Uncle Forty out in the Bay. You know, he's, you know, got his Fat Burger franchise. It's the Slurricane. Look, he's got a whole bunch of businesses in addition to MCing.
Right.
So he's, you know, and it's like they've all understood that the rapping can only go so far. And
right.
They're all in a place financially that they have reaped the benefits of it. But their thing is, okay, we have to do something that is really going to take us to that next level of notoriety.
Right.
You know, in terms of ensuring our longevity, that's where legacy comes from. You know,
right.
Because, and now, you know, with E-40 son, Droopy, you know, who's been producing for some years now, you know, Droopy's become his own entity, you know, learned from his dad, and, you know,
your dad planted that seed. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's so many different ways, man. Like, what I'm saying is like for instance, the music business, man, you know, we got to take it for what it is. Like, you know, for instance, James Cruz, one of 50 Cent managers, you know, he used to work for Violators, James Cruz, like, he was a big thing back then. Now you look at James Cruz, what is he doing? He's managing like Uzi Vert and other rappers that are younger. So that lets you know, like, he never stopped it. He's still James Cruz. He just went to something else. So what are you going to do? Like, are you going to start a label? Are you going to sign some younger acts? Are you going to start acting? Are you going to do a podcast? This is the music business. Your seed has already been planted. Everybody know who you are. So you like a car in the garage. You just got to jumpstart the battery.
Mm.
What you going to do? You going to lay over and die? Or you going to get out here and start and get active? It's up to you.
Yeah. And that's something that people got to
sink or swim.
You know? Yeah, you know, you got to be able to move to that next wave. You know, like you said, like 50 was saying in Wangstein, like, damn, homie, in high school you was the man, homie. The fuck happened to you? You know, it's like you can't live off those old reputations because you don't want a situation.
And you can't live off the old school rules that we were taught, because that don't work anymore.
Right.
All the rules that we were taught, throw that shit out the window. That shit don't work no more. Putting out good music and that shit don't work. Putting out good music and a good video and hoping the fans to come, no, that shit's not gonna work. But there's other ways to do it. You just gotta know the way how to do it. And these rappers, these young rappers who do it, nobody's gonna give you the blueprint, man. You gotta figure it out on your own. You know what I'm saying? Because one thing about these young kids is Their way of doing it is backwards. So basically, the way the young kids do it is, they want to see you in the news media first. Then once they see you in the news media, then they go back and research your catalog.
Right.
So
right.
You could damn near go viral over anything. You might. Shit, I can go in the middle of the street and fart in the gas station and, you know, go viral. You know, and I'm not saying just be a goofball and go out here and do anything to go viral, but I'm saying
get active.
I'm saying you never know what post you're going to do is going to hit, or you never know what TikTok rap you're going to do. Like, just get active, man. You know what I'm saying? Take some acting classes. You know what I'm saying? Do a podcast. Talk some shit, man. Go put out some other acts. This is the music business. You already got your name, so what you want to do? But if you sitting at home with the kids and you know what I'm saying, and you can't go to the studio no more like that, and you just living off your past, and you grumpy, and you old, and you hate the new music out, man, look, you're gonna be at crisis soon, man.
And that's
real,
man. Yeah, you gotta stay real with it. You gotta move with the times, man, because it's easy to get complacent because nostalgia is a slow killer in a lot of people.
Right.
And I think that's why for the verses, I think that's why it's so dope, because we're seeing the young kids now, seeing these artists we grew up listening to, and you especially being a part of that era, being active in it, they're getting that musical education. You know, what we saw with 3-6 and Bone, you know, what we saw with Snoop and DMX. You know, the younger generation today, you know, I affectionately call them the babies. You know, the babies are seeing it now from what we grew up listening to. So they didn't see Snoop as like, we know they see Snoop now as kind of being
Uncle Snoop.
Still does course music,
Snoop.
You know, yeah, they see him as Uncle Snoop. We knew Snoop when he was gangsta ass Snoop Dogg, Death Row Snoop.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You know. So it also shows.
But Snoop doing everything under the sun. He's taking every check coming towards. Okay, what you want me to cook with Martha Stewart? Okay, I'll do that. You know, he dibbling, dabbling, everything. But, you know, no disrespect, but they don't really care about his music no more. And that's fine, because he knows that the music is just the bridge for everything else. He's still going to make music because that's what he do. But the brand is Snoop Dogg.
Exactly.
The brand is Snoop Dogg.
Plus, and plus, not to mention, they had to find other ways to maneuver, because a lot of these guys, they just now getting their money from the music, because them label deals were crazy back then.
What did you learn from the time from when you all were signed in terms of how the deals were, and then watching everybody else's deal at that period?
I don't know, man. I definitely had a decent deal. Maybe because we were signed to Marshall. You know what I'm saying? And he was our homie. He's a good guy. You know, so I really can't speak for other rappers.
Understood.
But you know, our deal was, you know, dope. So, but you know, I don't really knock people, you know, good or bad, man, because you can't say what you'll do until you're in that situation. And sometimes it should be take it or leave it, man. And the way those labels do, man, you know, just like how life work, it seemed like those deals and the signing bonuses be coming at a very, very vulnerable time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, sometimes, man, your life depends on it.
Speak on it.
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, it just seemed like, you know, when a rapper gets signed, I don't know about now, because like I said, I got the drug dealers back in the month with the money, but like in my time, it was like, you know, shit, we was starving, we was broke, you know, they were coming at you talking about, hey man, you know what, we got 60 bands for you and, you know, $250 recording budget, you know what I'm saying? Like, you like, what? Hold on, shit, hell yeah, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Cause it's not like back in the day when it's like, you know, I think it's different now, because you were in control of your own thing now. So now I could put a record out on YouTube and it blow up and go viral and got 16 million views. And then, you know, I can you know, take my pick the label and get in bin wars and all type of shit. But when we was coming up, shit, man, you know, to get a meeting with Def Jam was like, you know what I'm saying, like unheard of. It wasn't really about was you gonna not take it or not, because especially coming from Detroit, because like that's it, like ain't like Atlantic looking at you and Warner Brothers, ain't like you got a choice. So because you know we came up in the era of A&R signing you. A&R could just like you and say, you can be from anywhere. You can be from buttfuck Wisconsin, and A&R could like you and say, all right, man, look, I want to sign these guys. So now A&R don't got that power no more. They'll get fired if they sign somebody like that. So they gotta literally sign people according to what their views and their likes is and how many followers they got.
Yeah, and it's wild, man, because when we look at the metrics now, the analytics where artists are getting signed, because when we are looking at, like you said, Bizarre going viral, we're looking at now artists are being predicated on their popularity, and that's where a lot of times the celebrity is coming, but the music is not always going to support the internet fame. And I think that's what artists have to understand. You know, eventually you're going to have to show big music. We talked about this on the show before, how a lot of artists have all these internet followers, and some of them bought, let's keep it real, because we know the story, shout out HBO for the documentary on people buying fake followers. But the thing is when they actually got to do a show or what have you, or sell records, they don't really have that push. They don't have those fans like the numbers would suggest. So you have to organically grow from a perspective of your music reaching people. And, of course, the means now are different, but good music is going to stand the test of time no matter any era. And I think that's what some of these artists today have to understand.
Hey, I think his call got dropped.
Oh, okay. Just call back.
His call got dropped.
Bizarre, we got a little bit of time left. Call back Bizarre if you with us. Yo, man.
Yeah, just call back the same number.
Man, but dude, I mean, he dropped some jewels on us, man. You know, I mean, he gave us some game about it. You know, from somebody who's been there. And but you know, for him to have the longevity that he has had, and to have the wisdom that he has accumulated from it, says a lot, you know, because when you come from where him and everybody in D12, you know, all of them came from, they know the struggle and they know the dangers of the streets. So their thing is not to get out there. And, like, you got a lot of these dudes out here now, they just want to jump into it to prove something. Which lets you know either they're that irresponsible in their approach, or they never lived it and they're trying to do a crash course trying to live it.
Dudes are trying to go back, man, because it's like, okay, I made it, but yet my credibility, I feel my street credibility isn't intact yet. So what I got to do is I don't have the aptitude to make people check me out. Because my music ain't all there. I'm there by luck. So, okay, let me go to the hood. Let me get into some funk. And that could boost my rep all the way around. So that way now I can get extra attention off that. And because my music ain't really hitting it like that. I don't have no confidence in my music. So I'm going to go ahead and just get into some nigga shit. And then that's where it happens.
One thing about it, about the hood, is people who've grown up in the hood who know the struggle of it want to get out. The hood is not a fun place in terms of deprivation and the dire straits that you are in. And anytime someone can make it out of there, it is always a celebration, because for what you may have been deprived of growing up, you've been able to make it out and attain. Anybody who's really been in that level of need and strength struggle will tell you it's nothing to celebrate. It's a celebration when you overcome it, but it's not something you want to stay in. And I think that's why for some people, when they look at the means of, like Bazaar was saying about how when people come to you with a contract with X amount of money that they're going to give you, that's why some of these artists are going to jump at it, because, you know, $60,000 for a person who has had a pretty good upbringing, and if they've had an affluent upbringing, especially, $60,000 ain't nothing. For a person who grew up in a good upbringing and they got a good support system, family, financially, they understand the importance of really taking the time to approach a deal and seeing if it works for them. But when you're dealing with somebody straight out of the hood who ain't never had anything, that's a lot of money for them that they feel like they got to take right then and there, because they don't know if they're ever going to get that again.
Exactly.
But it's about also, too, yeah, but you definitely don't want a slave deal. Like, just like when we talked with Sherrod last night, shout to Sherrod G representing Flint, Michigan. You know, he was talking about how a lot of these artists, they just get caught up in it and trying to be a, and you know, and like what Bazaar was saying, you know, which was a gem. He was talking about how these labels will catch somebody at their most vulnerable state. And when these labels know that you necessarily don't have any position to bargain, you don't have leverage in negotiations, they're going to shark you, because they know that at the end they got the upper hand. That's where you have to be savvy in your approach of business and understanding first and foremost your worth and then what they think your worth is, and make sure that you don't sell your worth out to be their appraisal of what they think your worth is.
Exactly. Yeah, we had to take him to church on this one, man.
Yeah, man.
But you know, yeah, man. But I don't know if it's his phone got on cut off or a battery probably died. But we want to, just in case he doesn't call back, we want to thank him for, you know, taking the time to chop it up with
us.
It was a dope deal. It was a dope dialoguing with him and getting the history of the D. You know, where he's going with a solo, and you know the importance of not being stuck in the past and still moving with the times and being fresh without, you know, looking like you trying to fit in.
Right. And that's the main thing, being able to move forward and understanding that the world don't stop in the period that you were hot. You know, you got to keep cooking, you know, continuously. And that's the main thing. You know, more than that, it's about just really setting yourself up for the next wave. You know, when you look at what Snoop Dogg's doing, when you're looking at what Ice Cube's done, you know, when you look at what Griselda's doing, in addition to the music, they're doing their fashion line. So they've already, you know, prepped in terms of what they've been doing to keep going in other places. It's unlimited what you can accomplish in this industry of entertainment and music. And it's about being able to, you know, just find what moves you and then being able to move yourself forward with what moves you. And that's the most important thing.
And that's a known fact, man. So, you know, we about to close this thing off, man, before we get cut off, man. Once again, big shout out to the Detroit rap scene. Big shout out to Bazaar for taking the time to chop it up with us. We'll be sure we will hopefully have a part two lined up in the near future. So
definitely.
Tell people what's going on. We got Speech and Configure from Arrest Development on board for Wednesday. I got my man from Africa, Don Stormy. He's pulled up for Thursday. We just working, man. We just putting in that work, man. So check me out Thursday. Follow us on Off the Cuff Radio on Instagram, Twitter. Y'all know the vibes. Y'all know the real, man. And we just going to keep hitting y'all with that content.
Definitely, man. So we still got some heat for the week. So we're still moving with it. So on that note, we close it out for tonight. With all, once again, thank you, all of Detroit. all of Michigan, you know, thank you. And we are out.